Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I'm sitting here in my office. It is 8 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. Just got finished having a couple of cups of coffee, some scrambled eggs with some cheese on them, and I'm sitting here in my office with my leg propped up on a Coleman cooler, still full of the ammunition I brought down from the Broken Skull Ranch. On top of that cooler is a mug of coffee. I could use one more cup of coffee to be at full speed. Sitting on the floor to my left is the infamous Pearl Beer Neon Clock. Sitting beside me, right in front of me, there's the industrial clock that used to hang in the pavilion at the Broken Skull Ranch. It was hell standing on a ladder, taking that damn clock down by myself, which probably weighs about 50 or 60 pounds. It's a hell of a structure. It's from the 1930s. It's a double-sided industrial clock that they used to hang in the warehouses so the workers, you know, coming and going, driving forklifts or whatever, could see what time it is by looking up at this clock. That's why it's double-sided. And, man, that thing, again, two and a half feet, one side of the neon is burned out. I'm going to have to get my buddy Curtis Clocks to fix that thing for me over in Burbank. There was no way I could leave that clock there at the Broken Skull Ranch. That thing had to come back there to Marina Del Rey with me. I bought it in Burbank, California from Curtis, and I hung it down there at the Broken Skull Ranch. I bought it specifically to hang down there, and now, because I'm such a small house now, I think I'm going to build a pedestal for it and just put it in the corner. So that's kind of my setup here this morning. I woke up actually about 5:36 a.m. Turns out I had about 11-week-old black lab puppy chewing on my sleep apnea mask as it was strapped to my face. Callie is kind of in the teething stage for any of you puppy fanatics out there. She's black lab, 11 weeks old, and she is an absolute pistol. We've had her now for about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. She's starting to get really settled into a groove. Moolah is playing like gangbusters with her, and Moolah is 4 years old, and it's just hilarious to see this dog play with Moolah. She will leap off the couch just like a mountain lion onto Moolah. She is absolutely fearless. The vet told us, our doctor said, man, she is an alpha pup. And she is. She has all the makings of being an outstanding dog. We're already teaching her how to sit and stay and doing all that stuff. And she seems to be extremely smart. Hershey, the old curmudgeon, the old crustacean, is going on about 13 years old, and she is the alpha female, and she just kind of regulates, and she'll growl at her and put Callie in her place, but Callie just looks up to Hershey like a mother figure, so there's a lot of respect there, and it will be interesting to see the inspiration or some of the influences that she will draw from the personalities of Hershey and Moolah, just like Moolah did from Hershey and Shona way back in the day. So anyway, that's how I woke up this morning. A couple of cups of coffee here. I'm sitting here in the office, and I thought I'd give you guys, here in the open of the show, just a quick rundown of how I got introduced into the world of the outdoors, hunting and fishing and everything like that. You know, maybe I covered a little bit of stuff in my book. I can't remember. That's been a long time ago. I've been hitting the head with so many damn steel chairs, I can't remember half the shit I did. And that's just the way it is. But just to give you a little lead up to about the Broken Skull Ranch and how I come to probably in my 30s, you know, dream one day about having my own ranch and then buying my own ranch, living a dream for about 10 years and probably about 8 years into that dream, realizing, hey, man, you know, you always wanted to own a ranch, but the one thing you didn't look at from a long-term perspective, being based now out in Los Angeles, California, just the destination, the trip, the 1,500 miles, which got to be just a little much. And maybe my wife will join me on the second 30 minutes of the podcast. I sent out a tweet on my Twitter account, Steve Austin BSR. I'm also on Instagram, Steve Austin BSR. If you guys had any questions, to send them in, and I'll answer a few of them. And thank you for sending those in. I've taken those and I've put them aside, and I'm going to answer a few of those questions as I ramble through this podcast. But just to give you a little bit of background, for those of you who never read my book, or you're new to the show, or you don't know as much about Steve Austin, the person, as you do about Stone Cold Steve Austin, the toughest SOB in the history of the WWE, I'll tell the tale to you like this. I'm going to go kind of long story short, just kind of going through the paces of how I came to be a person that loves the outdoors. I was born December 18, 1964, in Austin, Texas. My name was Stephen James Anderson, and I had two brothers. Scott's older than me. Kevin would be 10 months younger than me, and we lived in Austin, Texas, with our father and our mother. And shortly thereafter, they got a divorce. Once my mom got a divorce, she decided she didn't want to be in Austin anymore, so she made her way down to Victoria, Texas, where she got a job being a telephone operator. Now, I don't know if they have telephone operators anymore, but she was actually plugging the cables into the, you know, little board there and connecting calls. After being in Victoria for a little bit, she met an insurance salesman named Ken Williams. Ken Williams also played in a country and western band on Friday, Saturday nights. Arnold Parker and the Mustangs, Ken Williams and the Southern Airs, a couple of bands, and they were a very popular band in the Victoria area from about a 100-mile radius. And my mom and dad, you know, Ken Williams is who I look at as being my, you know, my dad. He's not my blood father, but he's my stepfather, but I look at him as being my real dad. They had two more kids, Jeff and Jenny, and we're all still up and running. And my dad grew up in Yoakum, Texas, which is about 30 miles from Edna, Texas. And it's a little country town. And my dad grew up hunting and fishing and working his ass off, old school. And anyway, so my mom and Ken get married. He adopts us. We change our names to Williams. I become Stephen James Williams. And since my dad had always been hunting and fishing, you know, now he had three boys, and so he took us hunting and fishing, because that's what you do when you have three boys. You got to get them out there and do the things that you do. And so I can always remember walking behind my father in the woods. It'd be Scott, me, and Kevin, and my dad was always looking behind him with his finger up at his lips. Shh, God damn it, be quiet. I will never forget that. And about the time, you know, we moved from Victoria to Edna, my father joined a club. It was called the American Sportsman Club, and it's no longer around. It went out of business, but they had properties all over Texas. And I remember going to all these places, and we'd be in a Dodge pickup truck with a camper. We would pull behind the pickup truck, and we hunted all over Junction, Sonora, Ozona, Castroville, kind of, you know, north of the San Antonio area, still out in the hill country. Every now and then we'd hunt a little bit of South Texas, but not too much, because South Texas was kind of trophy deer hunting, and things were a little bit more expensive in South Texas because of the quality of deer. And so we did this all the time, and my dad got us introduced to the outdoors. And, you know, I got into the wrestling business, and I got real busy traveling, and I stopped hunting for a couple of years until I went down to WCW and hooked up with Paul Orndorff, and he got me back into the hunting game in about 92 or 93, and Ravishing Recruit would join us out there in Ryan, Georgia, in our hunting camp. And then I hunted with those two guys, and we had a blast. And then in 1995, the back end of 1995, after WCW fired me, Paul E. Dangerously, Paul Heyman picked me up. I started working for ECW, and then I started working for the WWF as the ringmaster. That's when I moved back to Texas, and that's when I started hunting again with my father. And we were hunting, if you guys know Texas at all, we were hunting right outside of Del Rio, Texas, not too far from the border, in Comstock, Texas, in Val Verde County. And I'll never forget hunting out there. I had a little camper shell that I'd bought off a guy for $200. It was just an old trailer that was about 50 years old. It was an old Fireball RV. No water, no electricity, no toilet. I froze my ass off in the winter, and that's where I stayed. And so I got introduced a few years after that to a friend of mine, who came a lifelong friend, in Catula, Texas, in LaSalle County. And every year, I had already made the move to Los Angeles, and every year for deer season, I would fly down to San Antonio on Southwest Airlines. I would get a ride to Bernie and go to American Dream Vacations and rent a Class C motorhome, drive to Catula on Trey's property, and camp out about 300 yards from his house. And goddamn, man, me and Trey used to hunt, and we'd drink Crown Royal whiskey all night long. We'd start a bonfire, and I'll never forget, that's where I met Hershey when she was about 6 months old. And then the next year, she was a year and a half old when I came out to Trey's to hunt. The same setup, going to American Dream Vacations, getting an RV, driving down there. And that's when one of the years, that's when I invited my wife to come down to South Texas to camp with me, because my wife doesn't hunt. She comes from a hunting background family, with her father being a big bird hunter. He's no longer with us. And they grew up hunting and camping as well in a 24-foot Class C trailer. So she was used to the outdoor world just like I was. And although she cleaned a lot of birds and cleaned a lot of ducks, she was not a hunter. My wife is a vegetarian, but she grew up the same way I did with respect to the outdoors. So that one time she came down to Catula with me, that's the time we met, where she met Hershey for the second time. And that's when we fell in love with Hershey the Wonder Dog, who was owned by my buddy Trey. And the hunting trip was over. That's when we went back to the airport. And we were sitting there in the airport bar having a drink. And we both looked at each other. We said, man, we can't leave that dog out there. We got to have that dog. That's when I picked up the phone and called Trey and started, you know, bartering with Trey, who's a used car salesman or a car salesman. And that's a tough proposition right there when you're trying to do business with a guy who sells cars for a living. Long story short, I bought Hershey, and I paid a lot for her, but she was probably one of the best investments I ever made in my life. And she's one of my best friends, and she's still with us today. Anyway, on with the story. One year I was flying back down to South Texas. I picked up my trailer, my Class C RV, and I was heading down to Trey's to hunt in Catula. Trey had sold the ranch, and the new owner was going to let me hunt. Well, turns out the new owner changed his mind, and Trey called me and said, hey, Steve, I got bad news. You can't hunt here this year. And I said, well, shit, what am I supposed to do? I got my gun. I'm in my trailer. I'm already headed down to Catula. I'm 60 miles out of town. Trey said, man, let me make a couple phone calls. I don't know how he come up with these people's name, but he called the Lazy Fork Ranch in Tilden, Texas, and in McMullen County. The Lazy Fork had a spot I could come down there and hunt, and so I went to the Lazy Fork Ranch, and to this day, myself and the owners of that ranch are very close friends. They turned out to be some of the nicest folks I'd ever met in my life, and after hunting that year in McMullen County, after dreaming of wanting to own my own place, to do my own thing, once I realized that, you know, I had the capacity to be able to do that, and had, you know, delayed it because I didn't know where I wanted to be. I knew I wanted to be in McMullen County after that. And so that's when I started searching for a ranch in McMullen County, Texas. As it turns out, I had word on the street that there's about 2,000 acres available down an old county road in Tilden, Texas. I was looking for about 2,000 acres, and that's what this was. I got on Southwest Airlines. I flew down to San Antonio, got a rental car, drove down to Tilden, went down that county road, and it had rained cats and dogs. And the ranch was so covered up with rain, I couldn't see but maybe half, two-thirds of the ranch. But based on what I had seen, I knew that that was a damn good ranch, and that's the, you know, the ranch that I was going to try to buy. It had five tanks on it, or five ponds, and it had everything I wanted. And I thought it had a good deer herd, but it turns out the deer herd wasn't worth a shit. And it was shot out, and it was going to take a lot of hard work and effort to grow that thing into the ranch that we turned it into. But, you know, some key notes here. I had been dating Kristen for several years now, probably three at the most, maybe four. And so when I flew down there and decided to buy the ranch, I'd told her, you know, what I wanted to do. And she had come down to Texas with me, and she enjoyed the peaceful tranquility of South Texas, even though it is a little bit on the remote side. And I decided to pull the trigger and buy that ranch. And so day one from buying that ranch, I started feeding protein to those deer, because deer need protein to grow big horns. And that's one of the good things about the South Texas region, along with being just beautiful, tough brush country. Everything that grows there is protein for those deer. And you've got good genetics, that good nutrition, and age on a deer will help them grow big horns. And it's just tough-ass, beautiful country. There's something about South Texas which is absolutely magic, and I just love it down there. So anyway, we bought that ranch. We weren't married. I made the decision by myself. A few years later, Kristen and I would be married. And I'll pick up from day one, moving on forward, and take some of your questions that you sent in. I'll talk about some of the highlights of the ranch, but I just wanted to tell you how I got involved in the outdoors, and it was because of my stepfather, Ken Williams, taking us city slickers, because that's what we were, born in Austin, Texas, and then moving down to Victoria. Today, Victoria is about 60,000 as far as population of the city goes, and it's a great little city. I loved Austin, but we was just some kids there. And I don't know what would have ever happened to Steve Anderson had my parents remained married and had my mom not met Ken Williams. Would I have ventured into the outdoors? My father, James Anderson, wasn't an outdoorsman. You know, I think he was working at a gas station or a tire sale place where he sold tires. I can't really remember what he did, but I know he didn't hunt. So I always wondered, you know, what would have happened had we not met Ken Williams, who got us into the hunting, fishing, outdoor world. And that's the direction that, you know, my brother Scott is an avid hunter and outdoorsman. I am. My brother Kevin loves the outdoors, but is not a hunter. Jeff doesn't really like to hunt. Jennifer, my baby sister, she's not really into hunting, but I had so much fun guiding my niece and my nephew and having them with me out on the ranch and driving around on my Kawasaki mules. The best thing about the Broken Skull Ranch was it was in a location. It was hard for me to get to it. It was hard for myself and my wife to get there with the dogs. That 1,500 miles, however you slice it, is 1,500 miles. Whether we were driving in my Chevy pickup I've been ragging about. I love that thing. It's sitting in my driveway. Or whether we got one of the RVs. We had two RVs that we would take down there, you know. Started off with a big one, ended up with a little one that could haul ass a little bit better. Then we started flying down there. But it was only 165 miles away from Edna. So, you know, most of my brothers and sisters, my mom and dad are still in Edna. You know, it made it easy for them to get down there. And after all the years of my dad dragging our ass through the woods, hunting on the American Sportsman Club properties, hunting out there with him in Comstock in Val Verde County, which is absolutely beautiful country, being able to finally, after him breaking me in and teaching me everything he knows, to be able to pay him back. And for 10 years, South Texas, if you know anything about Texas hunting, Hill Country has some pretty damn good deer. Some of the ranches are excellent there. East Texas, there's a couple of good deer out there. But if you really want to talk big whitetail deer, you talk about South Texas because of the protein that grows down there, because of the genetics down there, and that's the way it is. And so for me to be able to put my dad on what would become a premier ranch after 10 years of hard work and culling and feeding protein and doing the work – to be able to pay my dad back meant a lot to me. And just this past year, you know, I don't know how much longer my dad's going to be hunting. He's 82 years old. And, man, you know, when he took a deer this year that scored 156, I was just ecstatic for him because that was about the last of the deer that we were going to take. And just to watch my dad, he's so old school and he loves to hunt so much, and that's how he brought up. It was really special to me. So anyway, that's how I got started. I'm coming back after the break. Hershey's scratching at the door trying to get in here in the office and hang out with me in the neon clocks and drink a cup of coffee. I'm going to see if I can get my wife Kristen to join me and talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of being out there where we were and what prompted the sale of this ranch. But before we get into it, let me tell you how you can do something nice for the four-legged members of your family, your dogs. I know a lot of you are like me and my wife, Kristen. Our three dogs are our kids. Callie is in my lap right now. And if you want to make your dogs real happy, sign up for BarkBox. BarkBox is a subscription box service that picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match your dog's needs. Each month's box is built around a certain theme and features 4 to 6 treats and toys. All you have to do is go to BarkBox.com/Austin and choose a dog size, small and cute, just right, or big and bold, and then choose either a 1, 6, or 12-month plan and wait for your first box to show up. And if your dog doesn't like something in a box, let BarkBox know and they'll send you something else. But if there is something that your dog loves, you can find the same product again at BarkBox.com. So make your four-legged kids happy. Sign up at BarkBox.com/Austin. And when you do, you'll receive a free extra month of BarkBox. That's BarkBox.com/Austin to subscribe and get your free extra month.
Hey, everybody, it's Shaq. Have you had a chance to check out the number one podcast on Podcast One? That's right, The Big Podcast with Shaq. Me and my co-hosts, John Kincaid and Rob Jenners, we have a blast. With way more than just sports, we have the biggest guests from entertainment to the NBA.
And don't miss Monday the 17th and Monday the 24th for a special two-part edition celebration of our 100th podcast, a special live show from Atlanta you're not going to want to miss.
I promise you've never, ever heard a show like this, The Big Podcast with Shaq. With a new episode every Monday at podcastone.com.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Man, I'm sitting here. It's 8:30 in the morning. I'm in my office. Had to let Hershey the Wonder Dog in here. She was pawing at the door, ruining the radio quality of the damn show. Hershey, now she's scratching for fleas. She better not have any fleas. My wife will be pissed off. Anyway, I thought we'd start off with the Q&A, but before I start off with the Q&A, and then hopefully bring my wife in for the back half of the show, thanks for all the questions. Man, I was really, I don't want to get sentimental, but say moved by how many people were, you know, saddened or shook or affected by the fact that we decided to sell a piece of property in South Texas. I guess that we've done so many shows out of there over the years that a lot of people have grown accustomed to the ranch or almost feel like they know the ranch through the descriptions that we've talked about and all the things that we do out there. And it was such a big part of my life. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it dearly, but I'm going to be in the hunt for another place. And, you know, just going to be able to, and I'll be saying this over and over throughout the podcast, so I'll go ahead and, you know, apologize for that right now. It's just too goddamn far. And that's the way it turned out to be. I wanted to be able to focus my sights on something a little bit closer, you know, while I'm still just 52, to be able to enjoy the outdoors more than I was owning the Broken Skull Ranch. The shout-out I wanted to give, I told you guys a story about my utility trailer, that gate dropping on the back end of my trailer. Those welds broke off. And it turns out the contractor who's working on our house next door on a remodel, which should be ready, and God damn, really, we're about 95% there. It should be done in less than 3 weeks, if that. So I will be excited, very excited, to move into that house. And he knew a welder. And I told Randy, my contractor, about my trailer story because he's an avid outdoorsman, as am I. And I said, goddamn, I said, Randy, you don't know anybody at Wells, do you? He goes, oh, yeah, I got a guy that I've been using a whole lot for 20 years. And so Robert Sims came over. He's from spacetechwelding.com. And Robert, L.A. City and AWS Certified Structural Steel Welding, Heliog Welding Repair Shop, aluminum, stainless steel, cast iron, and bronze. Man, he came out here, backed into my driveway, set up there on my utility trailer, and he had that thing fixed in, shoot, less than an hour. And then he rolled off, and he's from out here by way of Virginia. And he came out here, and he used to weld on F-16s, whatever they're called, fighter jets, and all kinds of stuff. And he started his own business. So if you're in the L.A. area, goddamn it, you need some welding done, check out Robert Sims at spacetechwelding.com. Thank you, Robert, for getting here so fast. My trailer is up and running. All right, here we go. Let's get started here. This comes from Ryan Gall. And some of these emails will be a little bit repetitive. I'll try to filter some of them out. If I repeat some of the stuff, I'll be very conscious of trying not to do that. Ryan Gall says, "Hey, Steve, man, I was sad to hear you're giving up the ranch. Although the amount of work required to maintain such a large piece of ground must take away some of the enjoyment for you. Did you ever consider hiring a full-time ranch worker to do the maintenance, allowing you to simply hunt and shoot the shit with Ted? Will you still see Ted from time to time? Will he still be a semi-regular guest on the show? I always look forward to November, January time, knowing that it's just going to be two solid months of two working men shooting the shit and having a good time. What are you going to do in the time period you normally allocate to deer season moving forward? You and Teddy hunting on a lease this winter? Ryan in Carmusel, Scotland, or Carnoustie, Carnoustie. God damn, man, all the way in Scotland. Hell of a following over in that area. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Yeah, I'll tell you what, let's go back to the beginning of that email you sent me. The amount of work required to maintain such a large piece of property is immense because you are always doing something. Like I said, it's all fun until you're doing so damn much of it, whether it's mowing in that tractor, keeping the senderos, you know, low and tight. I like to maintain that place. It looked like a state park. It was one of the damn prettiest ranches in South Texas you've ever seen. I was just OCD about maintaining that damn thing. And the good thing about Teddy is he was good at the things that I didn't really know much about. The float valves and the water troughs, fixing stuff. The thing about Ted was, hell, I lost most of my manuals to my Kubota tractor, my John Deere tractor, or whatever piece of equipment I had. Hell, Teddy would go on the internet, download them, print them out, and he would have all the information to order parts, do shit, you know, change out the back window of the Kubota tractor if we hit a rock while we were shredding. So Teddy was really good at helping maintain that damn piece of land. And of course, we turned into just, you know, best friends over the course of about 9 or 10 years. I believe Teddy was introduced to me by a mutual acquaintance who is no longer a friend that I'd like to refer to, but we were introduced by him. And when I met Ted, he was a lot like myself, a great sense of humor. Ted is a very dry sense of humor, very sarcastic, very quick-witted. And the thing about Ted is he's a loner just like I am. So, you know, as much as we love hanging out together, hey, man, he's cool just like I am if we don't see each other all day, but then gather up at nighttime to eat dinner or have a couple cocktails, watch UFC, watch a WWE pay-per-view or stuff like that. You know, that's when, you know, we would hook up. He would kind of know what he needed to do. It was like he worked out there, but it wasn't like I, you know, had to just say, hey, man, go do this, go do that. Sometimes I did. He knew what needed to be done. So it was just a great relationship where everything worked out. But to maintain 2,000 acres, and especially because Ted works full-time in Rockport, Texas. He's having to drive 125 miles each way to get there. Me at 1,500 miles, that's why the bulk of my work when I was down there during deer season was, you know, riding that tractor, mowing up the senderos and getting on top of things. Because this leads into your next question of why didn't you hire or consider hiring a full-time ranch worker to do the maintenance, allowing you and Teddy to simply hunt and shoot the shit? Well, my wife and I just aren't from that mold of having a full-time ranch worker living out there on the ranch. The times that I've tried to, you know, if you remember, man, back in my days in the WWF, I said, DTA, don't trust anybody, brother. And it turns out I had a guy that I trusted out there trying to help me out with the ranch, and it turns out he was doing a lot of things that he didn't need to do out there, and he got run off after about 4 or 5 years, and good riddance. I just, not that I tried to trust that guy and it didn't work out. I just didn't want anybody out there full time. I just kind of wanted to go out there and do it myself, try the best I could. And we did for 10 years. Man, that damn ranch was the pride of South Texas as far as I'm concerned. And there's some nice places out there. I can't be fair and say I had the nicest ranch in Texas. I'll just say there's a lot of pride and passion that went into maintaining that place. But that's why we never hired a full-time guy, because that's just not how me and my wife operate. And Ted was helping us immensely out there. And you said, well, you see Ted from time to time. Will he still be a semi-regular guest on the show? I hope so, because I consider him a lifelong friend. But he's down there in Rockport, Texas. I'm hoping, because my brother-in-law guides in Sparks, Nevada, he's been trying to get drawn up there in Sparks to hunt in Nevada, as I have now that I've sold the ranch. So hopefully we'll be seeing each other in Nevada, and I hope he'll still be a semi-regular guest on the show. I know that we had a lot of common, ground or common interest because of the ranch, but man, when I make friends with somebody, I'm friends with somebody. It doesn't require a ranch to be the focal point of conversation or our existence. I called Ted, or I sent him a text message to see if he wanted to do a podcast about the ranch, but he was so covered up in work, he wasn't able to do it. So my wife's going to chip in. And as far as what am I going to do in the time periods that I normally allocate to deer season, because I would always tell my agents, November through January, that's my time. That's when I go down to my ranch, my sanctuary, my pride and joy, my favorite place to be and hunt and work. So now I think I'm probably still going to maintain that time frame because, I'm able to. And I don't know whether I'm going to be in Nevada. Maybe I'll just be visiting. I contacted the Lazy Fork Ranch, the ranch I hunted, 11, 12 years ago. And when I fell in love with McMullen County, I've already contacted with them, good friends of mine. I told them that I would like to come down to South Texas for about 2 weeks in December when the rut happens. And I told them, I said, listen, man, I just want to come out there and hang out. I said, I don't need to shoot anything. I said, I've done enough of that for the past 10 years. I just want to come out there and hang out. And if, see something, that's one thing. But other than that, I just want to hang out in camp and enjoy the South Texas brush country, which I can't, express enough love and passion for, because that's how much I like that area down there. So I will be in South Texas for a period of 2 to 3 weeks. And I don't care if I shoot anything. I just want to go hang out and just ride my Kawasaki mule in the brush country. Appreciate the damn email, man. This next one comes from Andrew in Wisconsin. And he says, what it do, Steve? I was wondering if you're going to miss him damn pigs at all. And what about alligator? I have a few BSR shirts that say Till in Texas on them and can't wait to get a new one. Hopefully you drag Teddy and his bottles of whiskey with you to the new one if there is one someday. Keep on grinding as I really dig the podcast. Remember, folks, be better today than you were yesterday. Andrew from Wisconsin. Man, talk about them damn pigs. Yeah, I'm going to miss them pigs. And, man, I tell you what, I'm not going to talk about, hunting and killing, but, boy, you got to take care of them pigs when you're out there because they will eat your ass up. Tore my damn roads up. Big ass hole on the west fence line right before I left the property. Alligator, I tell you what, I introduced Alligator to the new owners, and that one guy didn't like him at all. I believe he had just seen a video of a big crocodile grabbing a front bumper of a pickup truck and ripping it off of the truck. And when Al E. approached the Kawasaki mule, I guess he thought he was going to grab that bumper on the mule and and try to rip it off, and boy, he was ready to get out of there. So I've introduced the new owners to Alligator, so they're aware well of him. We didn't really swim in that pond, so he never bothered me. I really like Alligator. It's fun to go visit him and, toss him a rabbit here or there. Ted used to take real good care of him. I think that's why he's so bold and why he comes up to the vehicles as much as he does. But, hey, man, if we end up in a new place, I'm still wondering where that's going to be, where it's going to be. Yeah, it could be Hill Country, Texas. It could be West Texas. It needs to be close. That could be in Nevada. I don't know where it's going to be. I got to think that I'd like to be within about a 500-mile strike of Los Angeles, because that's a pretty doable, easy drive any old day of the week. So that's how that's going to shake up. But, yeah, man, them guys know about Alligator. This is a question from Ty. Ty says, God damn, I never thought listening to a guy talk about his road trip could be so damn entertaining. I love listening to you, and you entertain the fuck out of me. I met you back in 2001 when I used to work for ASA Airlines out of Dallas, Texas. A lot of wrestlers would take the smaller aircrafts to the smaller Texas towns or surrounding areas, and the two coolest guys I ever met were you and Kurt Angle. You gave me an autograph, and I gave you the Rock eyebrow. Then you proceeded to ask me if I wanted the stunner. Thanks for having a great podcast. Ty, I appreciate you listening to the goddamn show. And don't sass me, because I'll fly down there and put a stunt on your ass right now. Here's a question from Matthew Mason. He says, Steve, thanks for all the wacky and wild stories from the BSR over the years. My question is, what's the one piece of property you're going to miss the most? Hope you said goodbye to Alligator on the way out. See your ass down the road. Matthew Mason. Yeah, man, I did go say goodbye to Alligator. And, man, as far as piece of the property I'm going to miss the most, man, I'm going to miss it all. Because you could ride that place. It was shaped like a rectangle. And all the different deer stands had their different, you know, pros and cons. That damn area around Tombstone, though, holy smokes, could you see some big deer there? I'll miss that. But as far as just the ranch, I think I'm going to miss that damn Kubota tractor the most. I mean, it could have been any tractor, but that thing had an air-conditioned cab, had a CD player. I'd put my noise-canceling headphones on and just get behind the wheel of that thing, whether it was, you know, mowing or pulling a piece of equipment out of the mud or something like that if it rained too much. It was always fun firing up that tractor and driving it. And don't get me wrong, driving it too much, you know, got to be a little bit old, but I'll miss the whole damn ranch. And, yeah, I'll just miss the whole damn ranch. God damn, here's a good question. This is from Darren Cart, and he, man, got a good question. Hey, Steve, what has happened to all of your vehicles? If I'm correct, you have 3 Ford Broncos, 1 Chevrolet Silverado, 1 Chevrolet Suburban, 1 Range Rover, 1 BMW X5, 1 Ford Focus, 1 motorhome, 2 Kawasaki mules, 1 Kawasaki dirt bike, 1 moped. I thought you mentioned it one time. Yeah, I do. You would certainly crowd up Gimmick Street with all of those. Well, I tell you what, Darren, yeah, man, I got a lot of goddamn vehicles. I left 2 of the Ford Broncos on the Broken Skull Ranch. Those conveyed with the property. I still maintain my white and silver one here in Los Angeles. It's a 1995 model. Has 41,000 original miles on it, and I still drive that thing when I'm not driving my Range Rover, which you mentioned. That is a lease vehicle. I got 2 years left on that. The Chevy Silverado, which you speak of, is the vehicle that I drove home. It's sitting in my driveway. Chevy Suburban, sold that to Teddy for a real good deal because I had too many vehicles. I think he's enjoying that thing in Rockport, Texas. BMW X5, our lease runs out on the X5 in 40 days. We're going to turn that in, and my pickup truck will become my daily driver, and then my wife will drive the Range Rover. We get rid of the X5, which is a tremendous vehicle, outstanding. But that way, we get rid of that thing, get rid of a car payment. 1 Ford Focus. That Ford Focus is out there sitting. I put $2,000 in the brakes and making repairs on that thing. It was only worth about $1,500, $2,000 when I bought it. I'd like to sell the damn thing, but I have a hard time seeing anybody give me $4,000 for a 2003 Ford Focus with 65,000 miles. Nonetheless, I don't need it. It's a very fun car to drive. Absolutely. We use it for most occasions to take the dogs to the vet. because it's so low to the ground, it's easier for Hershey, the Wonder Dog, for my wife or myself to pick her up and put her in that Ford Focus. Well, right now, we use it as a vehicle to transport our dogs back and forth to the vet when they have to go. That motorhome. Goddamn, you know, I was thinking about selling that motorhome. I think it's about a 2013-14 model. Got about 12 or 13,000 miles. Those are all going back and forth to the Broken Skull Ranch. I'm going to sit on that thing for a while. I wanted to get rid of it. And now that I'm going to be trying to go to just closer places, I'm going to hang on to the motorhome for a while. And the two Kawasaki mules, I actually have three. Buck the Mule is over there at the Broken Skull Challenge compound. I already shipped him back. And my two mules from the ranch, they were at UVC Power Sports in Alvin, Texas. I had some more equipment put on them. And, man, those weren't going to convey with the property. So right now, they were picked up just yesterday, and they're being shipped to the Broken Skull Challenge compound. And hopefully they get there on Friday. I'll meet the driver out there and put those in the 40-foot storage container that I use out there to store all my stuff at the Broken Skull Challenge compound. And as far as my dirt bike and my moped, I talked with my wife last night, and I think it's time for me to get off two wheels. So I'll probably put those things up for sale just because as much as I love them, I just don't need to be on the street on a scooter and in a dirt bike. I just, like I said, I think I'm a little bit more comfortable on four wheels. That hard pack out there at the Broken Skull Challenge compound, I tell you, for my rookie ass, with that 450cc mean-ass motor, that's one of the strongest, fastest bikes out there. I don't need that kind of horsepower under my ass. It's time to just stick to the I think a young lady told me the best, with age comes the cage. So that's why I like those Kawasaki mules so much. You can haul ass in them. You can have a lot of fun in them. You can enjoy the outdoors in them. And it's hard to fall off a Kawasaki mule. It's easy for me to fall off a dirt bike. So I'll probably sell those things and kind of start to downsize, just like I'm downsizing, you know, with everything else. And I sold the Komodo tractor that conveyed, you know, with the sale of the ranch. The John Deere tractor, that 40 horsepower tractor, I'm going to go ahead and sell to those people that just bought my ranch so they have another tractor. Right now, I'm not in a place in my life where I need that tractor. And if I buy a smaller place, I'd just as soon get one brand new that's going to suit specifically. When you buy a tractor, man, you can haul off and just go buy the biggest tractor you want, but that's not practical. You buy something too big for a ranch, you really can't use it. It's just too much tractor. By the same token, you buy a little ass tractor, you got a big ass ranch. It'd be like trying to put that 40 horsepower John Deere to work on a Broken Skull. That ranch is just too big. You needed about a 100 horsepower tractor, and that's what I got. So a tractor is specific to what you're trying to do. And so I need to see, you know, what the setup's going to be before I decide to pick another tractor. And of course, you know, those mules are always going to come with me, and they're being shipped right now. Here's an interesting question coming out of Warner Robins, Georgia, the home of Hall of Famer and badass Ron Simmons. Damn. Comes from Bud Pierce. He goes, "Hey, Steve, I recently just closed my gym due to time constraints and the fact that I was spending too much time away from my family, so I know what you mean about the ranch being just too far away. As I closed the doors for the last time, the one thing that kept me proud was knowing how many lives changed at the gym. So I forward that question or thought-provoking statement to you. How many lives were changed at the BSR? Good parties with friends, memorable hunts, deer mounts, etc." Man, I don't know. You know, when I think about my, I guess as far as lives changed or memories made would be the biggest thing that I could harp on. The fact that all of my family had access to that ranch and they could go at any time they wanted. They didn't always go out there, but they always had an open invite 24/7, 365. They wanted to bird hunt, hog hunt, do it, just go out there and camp and enjoy everything that I had out there. But the best times were during deer season when they would come down, and spending time with my family were all fortunate enough to still be around. And we have an extremely close family. My brothers, my sister, and myself, and my mom and dad were very, very close. And that ranch, like I said, those days watching, you know, my dad hunt and seeing the joy on his face, you know, because he was such an outdoorsman. His passion and love for the outdoors was just unbelievable. And God dang, he got the biggest kick out of hanging out with his buddies over there. We used to call my dad and his buddies the Apple Dumpling Gang. Because they come back from the morning hunt and they'd eat something or get a snack, and that's when they would get in my dad's Bronco and they'd ride around and have a couple of beers before they came back in and ate a little bit of lunch, laid down and took their nap, and then got up and got ready for the evening hunt, and then came back from an evening hunt, whether they had to clean a deer or just come back, and my dad would start his grill. My dad was just, I have to get Crystal on this. My dad cooked the same shit every single time we went out there. It was chicken one night, boudin sausage the next night, and something else the next night. And he was like clockwork. He did the same shit every time. And those are the best memories I have out there. Some of the memorable hunts would have just been not really taking anything, but watching all the fights during the rut. God damn, you never just think, because people think, white-tailed deer, they're so pretty. Yes, they are. I think the white-tailed deer is one of the prettiest animals in North America, and I just got nothing but respect for them. And when that rut comes on, the rut is when the bucks go to breed the does. And God damn, when I was talking to Macy Ledbetter, my wildlife biologist, he said, you know, that's it's a moon phase or the daylight phase or whatever that kicks them into the rut. But I believe that there's a spike in the testosterone level, and they start making rubs and scrapes. And a rub is when a deer rubs its antlers up and down on a tree or a sapling and just rubs all the bark off of it. And he's marking his territory, and he's just getting his neck strong, and he's ready to fight. And when a buck makes a scrape getting close to that rut, he'll start pawing the ground and scratching, almost like he's digging a hole. But he just scratches the ground, and then he'll piss on that hole. And he's marking his territory or giving a heads up to a doe, hey, I'm in this area. And just to watch a deer do that, and then to kind of stand on his back legs and rub his scent glands on his above his eyes right there by his horn, rub his scent on an overhanging branch. It's incredible to watch the behavior of the white-tailed deer. And, you know, quite frankly, I shot enough deer over there that I'm kind of over that. I just as soon watch them from here on out. And if I never take another deer in my life, I'll be happy with that. I've filmed so many. I've had to take so many to maintain the integrity of the ranch. But, it's not about killing for me. I just enjoy watching them damn things. And we had a couple of parties out there, but it never was really about a party, because I've always kind of been into doing my own thing. I guess some of the best memories that I could say was when my dad would set up in a pavilion and he would play guitar and sing songs, because I've been listening to my dad play guitar and sing songs my whole life. When we moved from Austin to Victoria and my mom met dad, he was playing in a dance band, country western dance band. My dad played lead guitar and he sang about half the time. And we would go to those dance jobs and shit, man. For my whole life, probably 40 years, because shit, man, I'm 52 now. They've been together for almost 50. But I just, old enough to remember going to those dance jobs, and it never stopped. When they stopped playing in a band after my mom and dad, they were coming home from a dance job one time, and they were pulling a trailer, and the little trailer said Arnold Parker and the Mustangs. Arnold Parker was the lead singer, and they were going through an intersection, and there were two old women, who are driving a car. And they blew a stop sign. They ran through a stop sign and T-boned my mother and father and hurt them real bad. And they both went to the hospital, and they both ended up being okay. And I believe the two ladies that T-boned them, I think they might have passed away in the accident. And it really hurt my mom and dad. And wasn't too long after that. I think he played another few dance gigs, but you know, then he kind of hung it up and just stuck to selling insurance. And then we would move to Edna, but he always played guitar and he always sang. And he taught my little brother, Jeff, and who's a badass little guitar player and a hell of a songwriter. And Jeff would come out there and sing. And then one of the biggest joys was when my baby sister, Jennifer, started learning how to play guitar. And God damn, you talk about a voice. She sounds like, I used to love that song she used to sing by Susie Boggess, that damned old rodeo. I can't remember the name of the song, but she sounds like Susie Boggess, just the smoothest voice. And then what's even cooler than that is her daughter, Emma, my niece, who I used to take hunting out there and ride around with, and her brother, Neil, my nephew, Neil, picking up guitar. So they picked up Ken's skills on the guitar, and they can both sing. And then to get them all lined up out there, it was like watching a live concert every single night after all the work was done and after all the hunting was done, to kick back and enjoy family time with those, my family members singing. And we just all sit back and have a drink, and hell, I'd be sitting by my mom, and hell, my mom's been dragging around watching my dad play at all those gigs forever. And when she would come out to the ranch, it was a real special time because she didn't always, care to come out there. It was kind of a little bit remote. And, that was a very special time. So that's what I remember most. There was nothing crazy that ever really happened out there. It was just all the good times. Man, I rambled on that last one. Let me try to shorten these things up a little bit. This is from Jimmy J. Hags. And he goes, hey, man, Steve, I've never been to the BSR, but all the stories you told us about it involving you, Kristen, Ted, Mula, Shona, Hershey, Alligator, and all the shenanigans that transpired over there made it feel like we were right there with you. I know you stated there will be another BSR, so my question is, you looking for a new location now? Is the Texas rattlesnake making a heel turn to the California cobra? Man, right now we got the pause button pushed. Like I said, I got my other two mules being shipped out here, and it'd be a real big decision. We're kind of just soaking it all in. We want to finish this remodel, get that thing done, get kind of moved back in there, reestablish home base, and make a real thoughtful decision about where we want to be with respect to being close enough that we can get there enough to enjoy it, being close enough to medical, being close enough to groceries, everything, a place that's not too big so that I can maintain. Like I said, man, I still got many good years left in me. I just want to be able to get there so I can do everything that I love to do. As far as the Texas rattlesnake making a heel turn to the California cobra, man, I tell you what, I'm living out in Cali now, but I'm born, bred, and my heart is in Texas, and it always will be. And I still actually own property in Texas, so I will always maintain my Texas residency. One of the things that I was, thinking about as far as California is living here, a lot of people, that 13% state income tax pile up on top of your federal. I don't care, that's a lot of damn taxes. So I've considered, moving out of state to, get out of those taxes, because that's a lot of damn money for 13%. That is a consideration, and I think it's a logical consideration, and you have to think about things like that. If there is a cool place in California, I could see doing that. I think Nevada is beautiful. It's 420 miles, that area that we're looking at over there. I don't know. I really don't know. West Texas, I think you could hit that in a day strike if you really wanted to. But, you're crossing through, Arizona. You got to go through Phoenix, Tucson, and then go back through Lordsburg, Deming, or that area. I don't know. And people have asked me about Colorado. My brother Scott's got a place in Colorado. I can't remember the town he's in. And I don't know about Colorado. Beautiful state. But I don't know. I'm still thinking about that. That's a tough-ass question. We're going to see, where we end up here pretty quick. Here's a BSR question. Steve, I'm one of your big fans from Europe and wondered if there's anything from the BSR that you will definitely recreate in your next ranch. Is there anything that you will want to do completely differently? Heading to California in September and looking forward to grabbing a pint at El Segundo. Take it easy. Graham from Scotland, living in Bavaria. Man, this show goes all over the place. Thank you for the email. And when you get to L.A., hey, man, hang a left out of that airport, 140 Main Street, El Segundo Brewing Company, and tell them the first one's on me. Make sure you let me know when you're coming. Hey, man, appreciate you listening all the way in Europe. Is there something I'll recreate in my next ranch? Boy, that's a tough one. I don't know if there's anything I'll recreate. I'll do everything on a smaller scale. Here's the thing that I've learned in ranch ownership. When you have a ranch, and almost anybody will testify to this as being the truth, less is more with regards to overhead. You're going to need a tractor. You're going to need your buggy. You're going to need items, but you don't need too much of it. The more equipment you have, the more you have to maintain, clean, work on, things that can break down. So don't over-equip. Have enough equipment, but don't have too much of it. Is there anything that you would do completely differently? What I would do on the next endeavor when it happens? Get the place and enjoy it for 6 months to 12 months or just some kind of time frame to completely understand that property, how it flows, how it works, how everything goes out there, and just start slowly. Don't just start putting in roads. Don't just start building stuff. Put some thought into the compound and everything that you're going to do there. So just enjoy it for what it is first and find out. Don't just make a quick decision and say, okay, I'm putting this here, I'm putting this there, and just start dropping money. Think about it. You always got to just think about it. That's my advice to anybody buying a ranch or anything. Just first of all, get into a place, get the feel of it, and then once you know it, then start your improvements. I kind of jumped the gun on some of the stuff I did out there at the Broken Skull Ranch. I started putting in roads immediately. Bam, I went and bought a big-ass tractor. I needed that tractor, but shit, I might have bought a different tractor had I thought more about it. With respect to the deer stands, I just bought a bunch of damn deer stands. I bought a bunch of feeders. I just started throwing money at the place. And, you know, now some of those feeders, you know, they're rotted out. They're rusting out, you know. If I had to go back and do the deer stands over again, I would have just got some $100 pop-up blinds that you can disassemble and just take apart or just fold up and put in the barn for the next year. That way, you know, you're not spending a bunch of money on these big-ass deer stands. It's almost too comfortable to hunt out of, and you almost don't feel like you're in the outdoors. They were fine, you know, when it was cold and you start your Mr. Buddy heater, but goddamn, when you have those permanent structures, the yellow jackets are always kicking your ass every year, and we're fighting those things every year. So if you don't have that permanent structure, which is always there, the yellow jackets can't, you know, build their nest and do what they do. They're just being yellow jackets. Also, I think the pros to just doing pop-up blinds where you could change your locations. You can have your main areas, but you could change your angle. You could change your distance. You could just, you know, once season's over, just take those things up and they're not out there in the elements, you know, getting damaged and just, you know, over time, they'll just get beat up. And a pop-up blind costs, you know, $100, give or take, versus shit, $2,500 for, you know, a piece for a bunch of damn deer stands, more than that. So you can spend a lot of money on things, and sometimes, I mean, you want to buy the best. But again, knowing what I know now, I would go back with pop-up blinds versus permanent blinds, just to be able to change the ranch around. With those feeders, we'd put the forks on top of that front end loader, and we could move those feeders wherever we wanted to put them, protein feeders, corn feeders, or whatever. But even on those, I would do my due diligence and research, and make sure that something is completely rust-proof, or as rust-proof as it can be. Inspect the welds. I would buy a completely different kind of feeder. I won't mention the brand that I bought. I wouldn't go back with them. And buy something that if you're going to feed is going to last for the long haul. And I'm talking about way longer than 10 years. So there's many things to reconsider. And at the next place that I'm going to get, the focal point won't be hunting. I can go down to South Texas and do that. What I want out of my new place is just a place to ride around on my mules or my four-wheeler or just getting in my Bronco and just riding the roads and shooting steel targets. I just want to set up a long-distance target range, various distances, and just be able to enjoy the outdoors. And, again, the Broken Skull Ranch was a place where I would go deer hunting, and I'll still hunt in South Texas, but this new place is going to be more about just being in the outdoors, being able to be by myself and enjoy nature and hang out with my dogs and my wife. But anyway, hey, I'm going to close this section of the podcast right now, and I got a bunch more questions, but I want to bring my wife in for about 30 minutes and shoot the breeze with her about, you know, the things that she enjoyed most about the ranch and pick her brain a little bit. I've been talking. I don't want to make this a big, long, dragged-out affair. Get her thoughts on the fact that, you know, again, I always dreamed of owning a ranch, and we bought that place. And then we got married, and she loved it out there as much as I did. She's very strong-willed, my wife, and very independent, and we loved it. But the grind, you know, dreaming of owning a ranch, as you go through it, time after time, again, again after again, just getting down there, that 1,500 miles, I keep saying that, but that is the ultimate reason of selling that place. It just got to be too much. And at 52, I want to focus my sights on being able to spend more time in the outdoors. And so when you have a dream, sometimes life, you know, and the circumstances you put in, things change. And so the dream changes or the vision changes. And so still want to get a ranch and spend it outdoors. But I'm rambling now. But let me ramble into a break, a pause for the cause, the sponsors that keep this show on the air for free. This is how I'm able to talk to you guys two times a week for free. And just a heads up, I'm going to be doing more Q&As, more live, or not live, but talking to you guys and taking your calls. So that should be something that I would like to accomplish in the next few weeks when I get this remodel done over at 316 Gimmick Street. Again, I'm coming right back with my wife right after the break. If you're in the market for a car, then you need to check out TrueCar. TrueCar gives you the pricing information you need to feel confident about your purchase. When you register a TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local area paid for the car you want. And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. And you'll also see all the dealer incentives before you get to the lot so you can feel confident about the price when you show up. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or used vehicle. And the stats don't lie. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There are over 13,000 dealers in that network with some 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. So do yourself a favor and go to TrueCar for your next car buying experience. TrueCar doesn't just make the process easier, it'll also save you some money. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Steve Austin. Steve Austin. Unleashed. Unleashed.
All right, everybody. Welcome to part two of the podcast. I've been joined by my illustrious wife, Kristen, and I was sitting here talking before I wrapped up the first part of that show when she came in. With this glass, and there's this orange liquid in it. And I'm kind of looking at her, and I'm thinking, man, I got a cup of coffee on the damn Coleman cooler that she's sitting on. I'm thinking, goddamn, she'd bring me a vodka and orange juice. And even for me, it's a little bit early. And she said, no, it's from our contractor. It's a vitamin B12. What is it, Kristen?
It's this special vitamin packets he gave me. It's B12, and it's vitamin C, and it's some special formula that it goes straight to your liver and does the job. So,
does the job.
I drank it. I mean, he said it's going to give me energy, so I might be on fire on this podcast.
Well, back in the day, I might have just chopped up a rail of Coke. But now that I'm 52, I'll drink the B12 and vitamin C stuff. But in another day, whole different conversation. Hey, I thought we'd jump into a little bit of conversation before you came in here. We tried to do this podcast about 2 hours last night, didn't we?
Yeah, and let me see if I can find a spot to sit in this cave of yours.
God, oh man, she's complaining about my office. Well, when I came back, I mean, there's my duffel bag, there's a suitcase, there's a jam box that I was listening to. That jam box right there is a song that Hotel California was blasting out when the tailgate of my trailer.
Is this the Unleashed podcast?
Yeah, it's the Unleashed podcast.
There is shit everywhere. Everything is in disarray. There's stuff everywhere. Why don't you put it away?
I told my wife last night because I thought she had Zumba. I said, you know, because I was just trying to, because I knew there was kind of just, when my wife, I can kind of read her and I can just see the tension building because his room's such a clusterfuck. And so I just kind of wanted to quell everything. And I just said, hey, man, while you're Zooming tonight, I said, I'm gonna clean that office up.
And I didn't have Zumba.
So I didn't clean the office up. So I've been here podcasting. And again, like I told you guys, the setup, I got this big clock. I mean, it's gigantic clock right behind Kristen. This Coleman cooler is just full of bullets. And it literally weighs 200 pounds.
Almost. And how big is this room?
It's 10 by 11.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is my new podcast studio. But anyway, so the room is trashed. My wife says it looks like shit. When my wife uses a four-letter word, you know it's bad.
My philosophy is everything has a place. Yours is everything has a place anywhere it wants to be.
See, we're kind of on the same page. If you break it all down, everything still has a place.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the ranch. I had a lot of emails from people, and a lot of people were kind of like, boy, they just couldn't believe we sold the ranch. And to a point, I mean, almost I couldn't either, because when you really start thinking about it, man, it's such a big part of our lives and how much we loved it there, you know, it's hard. It was a hard decision for us to make.
Absolutely.
And then we started talking about this probably 2 or 3 years ago, because, I mean, we started thinking about it. And
right.
It was like, as we were realizing a few, you know, 7 years in, it was really a lot of work to get down there. But then to make the ultimate decision was hard to do.
As you get older, you want to downsize. You know, just having 2,100 acres to maintain 1,500 miles away is a huge task. And, you know, you want to relax a little bit more instead of work, work, work.
And so to try to find a place closer that's smaller, because
right.
By no means, I mean, I still want to be outdoors. I've been saying that in the part one of the podcast. I don't want to be repetitive, but we're going to find a place. But like I said in the first, and maybe you'll agree with me on this, we'll hit the pause button.
Yes.
Settle down 316 Gimmick Street, get moved back in. It's almost done. You know, the light is at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
And just get everything situated and then take a breath of fresh air and don't be in a hurry, because you sell a place, you don't want to make a rash decision,
no.
End up in some place you don't want to be. So it's going to take a lot of research and really thinking about where we want to be, and with respect to climate, because one of the things about South Texas that, you know, wore a little bit on you was how hot it could be, you know, during the summer months.
It's hot. It makes me speechless how hot it is, because we would be there in the summer when you had your shoulder surgery, and we were stuck there for 6 weeks in the middle of August, and it was 112 degrees, and you couldn't even get a cold shower because that's how hot the water was. And you walk out the door, and like you said, you get punched in the face by the heat.
Yep.
And you can't even get up early enough to go work out, because it doesn't get below 85
it don't get below 90. If you don't work out ASAP early in the morning, you ain't going to work out.
No.
Because by evening, that's when we light up a cocktail. I mean, you're there banging around on the waist. Honey, bring me another whiskey. It is hotter than some bitch down there. So we always chose kind of avoid the ranch. We'd like to go down there, but you got to be careful, because my wife is born and raised in Cali, and I've been here for 13 years. I'm used to the heat of South Texas. I adapt very quickly. But, man, I tell you what, I really like the fact that Marina Del Rey, year-round average temperature, 70.
It's a very mild climate here, and it's always a good temperature. I mean, we don't get that heat and that humidity and the bugs and everything else that you get.
We'll get zapped, you know, and right when you think it's going to cool off, right around October, we'll get a couple of days of 95 up here. It's just dry, intense heat. Then I'll say it's a dry heat. Hey, fuck, he's heat.
Right.
But back to the ranch.
Oh, yeah.
Man, we talk all over the place here. Man, this drink you brought me with this vitamin B12 and C is really working. Here you go. Okay, chop, chop. Okay, the good, the bad, and the ugly in the ranch. I would say the good would be the peaceful serenity, outdoors, nature, 2,000-acre buffer. No one could get on the place that you didn't want out there.
Right.
And just watching the wildlife. I was talking earlier about how amazing it is to watch a white-tailed deer make a rub with his horns, make a scrape. You'll leave his scent. Mark branches with the scent glands on his forehead. Let me regain my train of thought. Callie started barking, so we put her and Mula in the backyard so they could play, and let us record an award-winning podcast, which I ain't going to win shit. Talking about the good of the ranch, I mentioned a couple things, and just independence and the fact that you're away from everybody. And I know you're more social than I am. You like your friends. You go do more things than I do. I like being out there. I like being alone.
The good, it's very peaceful, and it's great because you can just ride around the ranch, and there's nobody there to bother you, and you have free rein, and you feel like you have a buffer. And, you know, the wildlife is incredible out there. There's just, you know, living in the city, you don't see wildlife. I mean, we see crows, we see a possum here and there, and a lot of rats. But when you get to Texas, I mean, you can see, you know, we say we have our fair share of rats, but, you know, to watch the deer interact and their mating rituals, the mating rituals of actually of all the animals at the ranch, those rattlesnakes, which I would put under the ugly category, but we'll come back to that. But yeah, the coyotes, the bobcats, all the birds, there's just so many beautiful birds out there, the ducks, the quail, the dove.
Let's do a damn pack of coyotes, Hal. I never got tired of that. And just them yip and communicate. And, you don't never really see them do that. You see them dart across the roads and stuff like that. But just to hear them communicate out there is really neat. And when you get to hear noise, when you get to hear a sound like that versus, here's another part of the good, no traffic, nobody driving on my roads, and I don't want driving on my roads. You know, I ain't even got to use my fucking blinkers if I don't want to. Half the time I do. Yeah, or my seatbelt if I don't want to. But most of the time I do because it's an automatic reflex for me. And another part of the good is no helicopters, no sirens, no ambulances, and no just no traffic.
Right, yeah. But you touched on the communication factor, watching the animals communicate with one another. I know we've been watching, Callie interact with Mula and Hershey, and they're watching them try to communicate with each other. But just watching the animals communicate with one another, the coyotes, it's an incredible place to see and be, and that's the good part. But there's some, bad factors, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, you're probably talking about, when you watch those deer communicate with each other, whether it's the does with the fawns or the pecking order of the does, out there, you'll find a dominant one that'll rear up, an older doe kick up and start kicking everything, and she's the boss. She's the boss mama. And then you got the bucks out there, and all of a sudden, here comes this big dominant buck, and it's like, holy smokes.
Oh, and watching them go at it.
Just watching those things, and it's just spectacular. And here's the thing. While you're watching two big-ass bucks fight for breeding rights, you're like, man, this is incredible. And Kristen almost wants to go out there and referee and break them up. And I've almost, just shot my gun out the window just so I can scare them apart so they don't hurt each other. But they're in it to the death. And some bucks will die from fights that happen out there. But I'm saying it's good just because you never see that, and just to watch wildlife do their part to survive and carry on, and their genetics is amazing.
And when we're down at the ranch, we're on a different schedule. We do things differently, and we always ask ourselves when we get down there, why aren't we doing the same things, or why are we eating the same things and working out the same way we do in Los Angeles? I don't know, because we're just in a different place. So we don't eat the same. We eat more Mexican food, and we eat more, like, you eat sausage and all that kind of stuff down there, when here you don't eat that kind of stuff.
Well, I can't find, I love South Texas Mexican food. And like I said, I think at the beginning of the podcast, Mexican food is my favorite food in the world. And here's the bad part of that. It's hard to eat good, clean, healthy Mexican food.
Right.
Because, man, I'm beef enchiladas with tons of cheese, got the tortillas in there, and then the crispy beef tacos. So I'm in heaven.
Yeah, but we're almost like in a party mode when we're down there, which is, you know, it's nice because we, here we work too. So, I mean, you can't say the ranch is all work, but we, it's just a different feel when you're down there.
Here's the good thing. There's something about South Texas or something about being on a ranch that just makes you want to start. Maybe South Texas, it could be anywhere. Makes you want to drink a margarita or a cold-ass IPA.
But you know what it is? It's, you don't have to be accountable to anybody because you're tucked away in your ranch for 2 months straight, and there's no accountability except for yourself.
I don't know what it is, but God dang, you know, we'd fire up, you know, a Broken Skull Ranch margarita, you know, before that evening hunt, and maybe we'd make a lap with Teddy, have a couple of the dogs on the mule, and just look, and then, you know, halftime, you know, go to a deer stand with a little bit of a buzz and just hang out and sit there and just watch nature.
Yeah, and then have the family. The other wonderful part for me was having family down there and just sitting around and enjoying everybody's company, listening to your dad and your brother and your sister sing and play guitar, and having my brother down there, both my brothers actually. And, you know, my mom came down for one visit, but I think it was a little overwhelming for her because she likes to sit and watch TV, and we'd never really turn the TV on when we're at the ranch, except, you know, if you have the big screen on the football game or something. But, you know, all those wonderful moments that we got to enjoy with the family, that was definitely a highlight of it.
That's one of the things I said as well as the beginning of the thing, that one of the best things out of it all was hanging out with family and my dad. I kind of went through, you know, his singing career and all that stuff, but and watching my dad interact with Bryant and his lifelong friends, and he'd been friends with for 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of friendships like you have, I mean, over 30 years, people that you've been friends with, and those are kind of people that you want to hang around with and that are good for you and you're good for them. And when you can get everybody together, and like I said, man, watching not just my dad sing with Jeff and Jenny, but now to see Neil and Emma pick it up. And, you know, they're just my niece and nephew. They're just unbelievable kids.
Yeah.
But that was fun. But all that was good.
And we always were celebrating our birthdays and anniversary down there, too.
Yeah. My birthday's on December 18th. Kristen's on the 19th. We got married on December 21st. It's a triple whammy. A couple days after that, you know, you got Christmas and you got New Year's.
Right.
And so by the time we wrap that up, you know, about January 7th, January 10th, we were about, you know, had a gutful of a good time,
right.
But we had worked our ass off, and so that was about the time where it was time to get on that airplane or get in that RV and drive back to Los Angeles.
And it's almost refreshing, you know, when we got back, because we walked into our house instead of a double wide or a triple wide, and it felt good. And you know, it's January, so it's a little bit cooler, and it's just a nice feel. So
yeah, man, I tell you what, I'll put this as, let's go about the bad.
Okay.
Because I'll segue right into the bad. When you talk about this weather here, half the time during the rut, November, December, and going into January, you're thinking, God damn, man, it's got to cool off. It's got to cool off.
Right.
And you'll get a couple days where it'll be 30 degrees, a few days just under 32 of freezing. Sometimes it'll kill that green off the brush so you can see a little bit better. But sometimes, man, and in winter, when you go to a deer stand and I'm in shorts, tennis shoes or flip-flops, and
you're sweating
a dry fit shirt, and I am sweating my ass off, and them yellow jackets are making a comeback, and they're kicking your ass, and you're in a sweat box. It's like Cool Hand Luke, Paul Newman, put the man in a box. And so the heat coming back here to the cool weather was one of the nice things about it. And that was one of the bad things about South Texas. Not bad. I mean, it goes with the territory, but man, it's rough.
Yeah, but
out there when it's hotter than shit.
That and the fact that if I want to go to the grocery store, I have to drive an hour and a half just to get there. And then, you know, hauling everything back and unloading and, you know, I guess I'm not partial to some of the two-lane highways in Texas. They make me a little bit nervous driving. Whereas in LA, I know we have our crazy drivers, but, you know, it's just, I guess you trade one for the other. But that would be one of the other things that I didn't.
That was hard, going to get groceries, because if you just go to Pleasanton from the ranch, that's 55 miles one way. If you want to go to San Antonio to go to Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or whatever, that was 90 miles. So you're almost 200 miles round trip to get your groceries. And if you forget something, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You ain't going to turn around and let me go back and get the milk.
Right. And the other thing, you know, when the dogs did get sick, it would take us an hour to get to, you know, Jordanton to take them to the vet. And that's a little bit frustrating when you see them, you know, struggling in the car and, you know, you can't get to a doctor fast enough. And, you know, it's just that was another thing that was difficult, because you don't have access to services like you do here. Like, our vet's close here. The hospitals are close here. If we get sick, you know, we're close by everything.
That would be, what was the name of the vet we used? Dr. Clater.
Yeah.
What was it? Chaparral Vet.
Chaparral
Veterinary Services in Jordanton is awesome. They really helped out. I remember a bad memory that I have from the ranch was one time Hershey got pancreatitis, and it was a hell of a rainstorm, and we woke up in the middle of the night, and Hershey was puking blood everywhere. She was shitting everywhere.
Yeah.
And she tried, bless her heart, she went through the dog door to go outside because she knew that's where she was supposed to be.
Right.
But she was so deathly ill with pancreatitis. And there was nothing we could do.
No.
We were gridlocked out there because no one's at Chaparral yet. We called first thing in the morning, and I took her in there to Dr. Clater, told him what was going on, and he says, man, let me get to work, and I think I know what this is. And I thought that dog was going to die. I thought Hershey was going to die that day or the next day because it was so dire and such a bad deal.
Yeah.
And, man, he hooked some IVs into her and just worked a miracle, and she pulled through.
Yes.
And that was a scary, bad memory that I have of the ranch. And the other one was when Shona, our black lab, which we had to put down about 7 or 8 months ago, Kristen raised that dog from a pup, and she got the old dog, the vestibular.
Yeah, geriatric vestibular syndrome.
And so what was it? She had a seizure out there?
No, she had the seizures when we got back here.
It's kind of like a stroke because she just weirded
out.
It
looked like a drunken sailor, basically.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. We took her to the vet, but there's nothing, you know, it's just something she has to process. And it took about 3 weeks or 4 weeks for her to sort of snap out of that.
And when it happens out there in the middle of nowhere, because like our normal vet is about 10 miles away here in L.A., and sometimes if you're driving in traffic, it can take a while to get there, but he's got all of our permanent records.
Right.
He's been with those dogs for the longest time, and as tremendous as Chaparral was, that wasn't their home base.
Right.
It's like I have my primary care doctor, Jimmy Barrows, in San Antonio.
Right.
He's got all my records.
Right.
I can go to a doctor here, but he's got all my stuff. And so when Shona had that incident, and you're committed to staying out there at the ranch.
Right.
And that one time, you know, we flew out sooner than we were supposed to get her back to L.A. But that's one of the bad things that can happen out there. Just you're not around your normal services, and our dogs are our babies.
Right. Well, the other thing is, like, if you, which has happened, if you break down somewhere on the ranch, you've got to hoof it in the heat all the way back to the compound. Or if you're by yourself, you're in a, you know, bad predicament. I was worried about Ted being down there by himself sometimes because, you know, if something happened to him, how would we know?
That's one of the things. That, I mean, it's, when you break down on the ranch, that's always going to be bad. The good is no one was ever stranded out there. You know, no one was ever left for dead out there.
Right,
they
right.
always made their way back. Or, you know, there's one time I got stranded on the farthest southwest corner of the ranch and, you know, couldn't get a hold of you, so I had to walk 4 miles back to the house.
You're probably in your flip-flops, too.
I was, you know. And that's another bad thing, all the rattlesnakes. Kristen used to get so
that
mad
would go
at me.
Into the ugly category for
Is
me.
Is that going to go ugly?
Yes.
Okay, well, here's a good part about the ugly. No one was ever bitten by one.
Right.
A dog was never bitten by one. We never really had, well, there was a couple of close calls.
Yeah.
But no one was ever bitten by a rattlesnake. But those will go under the ugly category?
Yeah, and you always have that fear.
Let's put this under the bad category, okay. And I'm a toss it to you because you can speak to this. Mosquitoes and bugs. You're not a fan. They don't bother me, but they bother you.
In the spring, when you walk out your front door and you're inundated with, I don't know how many different species of bugs are out there, but there's a lot. And they're stuck to the screen, they're stuck to the windows because of the moisture. And there's these gigantic moths, these big, I don't know, what are they, wolf spiders or something? They're tarantulas.
Tarantulas and guard spiders.
There's just a lot of bugs down there. And I'm, you know, being in California, we don't have a lot of bugs. Although this year we have a lot more mosquitoes and crane flies because we had, you know, so much rain. But I am not a fan of the bugs. You owe everybody a beer.
Everybody a beer. Phone's ringing.
You always forget to turn your phone off. But look at, we sold the ranch. You can afford to buy everybody a beer now.
I guess so. And when the phone actually rang, I hit the pause button, and Kristen went to get her workout in. How was the workout?
Great.
I'm going to be bigger, faster, stronger?
Yes, I am. I'm going to be trying out for the senior version of the Broken Skull Challenge.
I'll have a walker, a wheelchair, or a pair of crutches ready for
you.
Yeah,
call the paramedics.
Oh, man, just wrapping up my thoughts and closing out the thoughts that we were talking about, the good and the bad and the ugly. We talked about some of the good, some of the bad. I don't think there is any ugly. And when I say bad or we say bad, it's all everything with a grain of salt.
Correct.
And you still don't like rattlesnakes?
I still don't like rattlesnakes.
I think they're actually beautiful.
Well, yeah, when they're hanging on your wall. They're not beautiful in the wildlife.
Well, when you see one coiled up, that's pretty neat. As long as your dogs aren't within striking distance and you
right.
can just look at them, the way they blend in and the camouflage, kind of the way they look, they're beautiful. But so there's no ugly part of ranch ownership or South Texas.
No, there's not.
You have just your good times, your hard times, and your tough spots. But through it all, goddamn, to wrap it up, we had a great time out there.
We did. We really did.
I took a lot of pride in maintaining that place, keeping the grass cut, keeping all the senderos mowed, and it looked like a state park, along with the help of Ted, but it looked like a state park, and that's one of the things I enjoyed most about that place. It was hard to do from 1,500 miles away, but taking care of that place, it was the pride of South Texas.
Well, you want to take some pride in this office today?
Oh, man. Did you just directly call me out on my podcast about cleaning up his goddamn office?
This office is a mess. I'm still sitting on the Coleman cooler. It hasn't moved. Hershey has barely an inch of carpet to lay on because she's in between a speaker, a backpack.
A box of bullets.
A box of bullets, two suitcases.
And you're sitting on a cooler full of bullets. You know what? I always wanted to buy a bobcat down there at the ranch to drive around with a little bucket on it and scoop all the shit up. But I think maybe I'll go rent me a bobcat, drive it in this office, clean everything up, and organize it accordingly so that when you come back, I mean, you're so proud of me that you just want to jump up and give me a big fat kiss. How's that?
That's wonderful.
How mushy is that? Yeah, never shut down a podcast now.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to thank my wife. That was bullshit. Callie's barking in the background. Shit's kicking up over here. I'm coming back with a close. I'm going to give you my final thoughts on South Texas, McMullen County, Tilden, Texas, the ranch down there in South Texas, and how we will continue on with the Broken Skull Ranch brand in my close. Thank you, Kristen.
All right.
My name is Raven, professional wrestling superstar, world-class idiot, and raconteur extraordinaire. Join me for my new podcast, The Raven Effect. Every Monday here on the Jericho Network on Podcast One, we'll be covering current events and any and all topics that can be properly bantered. Download and listen to the show on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on iTunes. Quote the Raven, nevermore.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. I'm going to wrap up his podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to give a shout-out and thank my old buddy, Ted Fowler, 361, for all the hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, time, and effort he put out there at the Broken Skull Ranch. Hell, I don't know if we could have done it without you, Ted. We turned a pretty damn good place into an outstanding place. That damn deer herd was shot out when we got it, and over the course of 10 years, we grew some of the biggest damn deer in the state of Texas, and we had fun doing it. My family enjoyed that place, and I enjoyed being around my family. We drank a lot of beer. We drank a lot of Crown Royal vodka, Bloody Marys, margaritas, you name it. We did it. We drank it, and we had fun, and all in the vein of just living the outdoor lifestyle. It ain't always all about the killing and the hunting. It's about just being outdoors. And that's the biggest takeaway I have from that is getting outside and enjoying yourself. The Broken Skull Ranch brand will continue to live and go on. I will continue to promote the Broken Skull Ranch. There will be another one physically. I don't know where that's going to be yet, but the brand lives on. And right now, it just kind of reminds me of that Metallica song, Wherever I May Roam. You know, wherever I lay my head is home. Right now, wherever I lay my head, that's the Broken Skull Ranch. Right now, it's a small little division in Marina Del Rey. But I'm in the hunt. I'll start looking. We will start looking maybe a few months, maybe a year. Whoever knows how long it's going to take. I've already got some ideas. We'll come up with another physical location. So right now, that ranch stays down there in South Texas. The Broken Skull Ranch Part 2 will continue wherever we decide that's going to be. I want to wish the guys that bought my ranch all the luck in the world. They have bought one of the best ranches in South Texas. A ranch with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears poured into it. Had a lot of good times. I'll miss that place. I'll miss all the nice folks in Tilden, Texas, and McMullen County, Jardinton, Pleasanton, Poteet, all those areas down there, and Nagel's Guns, all the people that helped us out so much. Neil Merchant, my mechanic, Joe over at Joe's Food Store, and JV Pipe Supply, building all the things they did for us, helping us with repairs. UPS lady, UPS guy, people at the post office. Man, I got nothing but good things to say about Tilden, Texas and McMullen County. Thanks to my friends at the Lazy Fork Ranch. I look forward to getting down there in December and spending some time with friends and maybe stopping by to see the ranch that I sold to the people that bought it. And I wish them all the best in continuing the legacy which we started. No plugs on the end of this show. I just want to say thank you very much to my fine sponsors for keeping the show on the air twice a week for free. They're the reasons I'm able to do this for you. You can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Hey, folks, keep listening. The 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin. And I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.